commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the Skipping Fanny Show, episode number 19.
Contracting with Cupid to drop stars into black holes, because we've got nothing better to do.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And this week we actually have some results from one of our polls, which...
Yay! People responded!
I know, we're very proud of you all. It's really fantastic. Well, almost proud of you, except for the results. We're not pleased. So, Jen, why don't you tell them what the results were?
Well, the poll was, which creature do you think would be the best to put a saddle on and ride? And my only really disappointment in this entire thing is that nobody chose Triffids. I mean, seriously, where's the Triffid love?
You're all bigots. Every single one of you.
Regardless, yeah, well, Regardless, unicorns took 20%, tauntauns took 20%, and Cthulhu Squid had a resounding majority of 60%. I suppose that's not actually resounding, but it is a majority. So... Cthulhu Squid won. Yay, Cthulhu Squid.
Boo.
I just wanted to see more Triffids.
Yeah, and Tauntauns, because Tauntauns would be fun.
Tauntauns would be fun. Triffids would probably kill you, but that would be kind of amusing.
Yeah, but it'd be fun. You could, like, ride on his back while he's, like, trying to hit you with a little spine
Whee!
Thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm all for the Triffids.
And Tauntauns would just be fun, because they have, like, little horns. You could, like, run around ramming people.
Plus, you'd be a character in Star Wars.
Yes, and you'd be like that game, Joust.
Right.
Which would be really fun. You, like, put a little joust on. Yeah, anyway.
But Cthulhu won, and I'm okay with that, because Cthulhu is awesome, so.
Yeah. So, this week for news is a bit of stuff that we recorded on some movie stuff that came up that was,
awesome.
I think, moderately interesting.
Indeed.
So, why don't we start off with... what I'm most excited about, compared to the rest, I really don't care about anything else. I care about this, which is that Ron Moore is actually making a fantasy TV series to come out on NBC. I didn't see the title of it, but it's described as an adult Harry Potter, which, knowing since Ron Moore's the guy who did the new Battlestar Galactica, it is going to be freaking awesome.
Yes.
That's
I know you're very excited about it.
I'm excited because it is going to be... amazing, and he'll bring Katie Sackhoff back in. It'll be.
I don't. Why would he do that? Why would he do that?
Because she would
That's
make a hot
stupid.
Wizard. Shut up.
That's just dumb.
She'd look great in that like star hat from Disney.
You're dumb.
You're dumb.
No, I think it's just exciting because it's going to be magic drama on NBC.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it'll be something like, you know, the Magician's Book, which everybody described as the adult Harry Potter.
Yeah, but it'll be better.
Probably.
Because it's Ron Moore, and so there'll be, like, really cool, like, philosophical questions he'll answer.
and you'll be able to analyze it for school.
Yes, and he'll bring lots of hot girls into it. So it'll be good for the guys who'd only watch TV for chicks and skimpy clothes.
That's very true.
Yeah.
All right, what's up next?
Bruce Campbell is making, or Camp, is it Campbell?
Campbell.
Is it Campbell?
What the hell is wrong with you? I'm totally revoking your geek license.
It's Campbell, though. It's spelled Campbell.
It doesn't matter if it's spelled... Is that how you pronounce Campbell soup?
I don't eat that. That's for poor people who live in trailer parks.
No, whatever. What is wrong with you today?
That's the poor man's spam. Okay, no. Bruce Campbell is making a sequel to My Name is Bruce, which I didn't actually see, but because I love Bruce Campbell, we had to talk about it.
Yeah, okay, so the premise of My Name is Bruce is that Bruce Campbell, is mistaken for his character from the Evil Dead trilogy. and forced to fight a real monster. So
that's awesome.
I have a feeling it'll be along, you know, the same thing. I haven't seen the movie either, but so it'll be, this one's going to be called Bruce versus Frankenstein, right?
Yep.
So presumably it'll be Bruce Campbell, movie legend, being mistaken for Ash and forced to fight Frankenstein. Either that or he creates Frankenstein.
That'll be so awesome.
It will be awesome. And, yeah. Like, I haven't actually seen the last few Bruce Campbell films. I'm busy watching him on Burn Notice. That's enough Bruce Campbell for me.
You can never
but
get
I love
enough.
Him. I love the Evil Dead series, so I think it's one of those geek requirements you have to
love. He increases the value of anything he's in. I mean, he was in the Spider-Man
totally.
Movies. And
oh, yeah.
He has a role in every single one. And even though some of them aren't so great... particularly number three. The fact that Bruce Campbell was in it, it's okay.
Yeah, his role was fine. It was just the rest of the movie that sucked.
Yeah, pretty good roles. I liked his roles. Yeah. They're really fun. Yeah.
No, I'll watch it, only because I've actually really enjoyed watching him in Burn Notice. He's the only reason I started watching Burn Notice in the first place. And he's not the reason I continue watching the show, but he's fantastic. And yeah, anything he does is okay by me.
It's gold. And plus, he realizes he's, like, a B-movie actor, so he's totally okay with living it up.
Totally.
Yeah. So, okay, so number three is actually, I think, one of the bigger news bits we have this week, just based on what has been going on over this franchise over the last couple years.
Yes. There is going to be a Ghostbusters 3, which all of you may or may not know about, and they have slowly but surely collected... almost the entire cast. And now actually they do have the entire cast because Rick Moranis officially has come on board for the third film.
And by the way, he said in an interview, I think just last year, that he was not going to ever go back into acting, that he was perfectly happy with this like country comedy ordeal. So this is a whole big switch up that he's actually decided to come on board.
It's kind of a big switch up for Bill Murray too, who said he refused to be on the show unless he was killed off. So there's rumors that he's going to be playing the ghost of Dr. Venkman. He's really not happy with being in the third movie for some reason. I'm not sure why, but he's been talking about it a lot. He's still going to be on it along with Sigourney Weaver, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, everybody literally is coming back for this. But it's still a reboot, so you're going to have the new young... people.
Oh, no, they just ruined it for me.
Now, whatever.
I don't want new Ghostbuster guys. I just don't care.
I know you don't.
Why can't you have it like, you know, they're sucked out of retirement to have to fight monsters, but they're all like fat old guys. And so it's kind of like the Space Cowboys with the old guys.
Yeah.
Remember that movie? It had like Clint Eastwood and...
No. I know. I get what you're saying. But at the same time, most of these people are perfectly happy in their retirement. The only two people that are, I think, even acting frequently are Bill Murray and Sigourney Weaver.
Dan Aykroyd has been doing... He's been doing frequent roles over the last few years. He's just not doing major roles.
He's not doing major roles. The only two that are doing major roles are Sigourney Weaver and Bill Murray. So, who knows, you know?
I mean,
almost everyone, Ernie Hudson, too, is doing minor roles, and television. But, yeah, no, I'm still excited. I don't care if it's a reboot. I don't care if they have a young cast. Just seeing these people in a new film and being able to use it as an excuse to force my children to watch the original two movies. That's epic. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll be good, but now that you just told me that it's going to involve new people, it'll suck.
Oh, shut up.
No, I'm right, and you know it. There have been no successful reboots in which they brought in young people.
Yes, dear.
No. Name one.
All right, let's get on to the
Name one.
No, I'm not going to name one, because you're going to go, that's the worst movie ever, and you know it.
Star Trek doesn't count.
Whatever.
It doesn't count because you have
No.
Star Trek doesn't count in that because it's writing about the characters that exist now, but you can't obviously have the old people come and play themselves as 20-year-olds. That's not possible. It's just physically impossible.
You name one that has turned out badly.
I can't name any that have turned out good. and I've erased all the ones that turned out badly.
I can't think of any that are even doing this right now. At this moment, I cannot think of a film that had the entire old cast and still brought in a new cast to reboot it. Can you?
No, because it doesn't work. They've all
That doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just means it hasn't been done.
They're all Uwe Boll films, so.
Don't even mention him.
We have to watch another of his movies.
No.
Yeah, it's on the list. We're watching Alone in the Dark.
No. I refuse to. I'm not going to do anything that supports that man. Not after hearing about his new movie. No.
Okay, well, he's doing a new movie?
Yes.
What?
He's doing a Grindhouse Holocaust film.
What?
In which he plays a Nazi guard outside a gas chamber.
Oh, well, that'll fit him.
Yes. So I'm not... No, his name will never be spoken again.
Well, we're going to have to do another of his films, so you don't have a choice.
No.
Anyway. So the big news segment is... Actually, I'm going to let you introduce this one, Jen, because you care about it more than I do.
Well, I guess I do. Only because two of our fans are huge... huge fans of the Dark Tower series. At least two of them.
We have fans?
Yes, we have fans. I know, weird, huh?
I know, they never say anything.
I know.
They feel really depressed.
I know. It's okay, we'll get over it. Anyway, most people have heard about Stephen King's The Dark Tower series.
Yes.
And it has, by all accounts, some of the best reviews for a series ever. It's very well loved. And they are now bringing it to the big screen and the small screen. I'm not sure I'm excited about the small screen, but I am really excited about the big screen because it's going to be done by Ron Howard and Brian Grazer. It is going to be a massive multiple film project. Apparently it's going to be a trilogy. So, you know, it's a good number, you know?
Yeah.
And they, I think, yeah, it's the Dark Tower and I haven't read it, but it is a fantastic storyline. So I'm excited. I don't know. I'm sure other people are freaking pissing themselves in excitement. They are going to try to match the epic feat that Peter Jackson pulled off with Lord of the Rings. So
yeah. Yeah. Ron Howard specifically said that. He said that he was inspired by Jackson. So
yeah, I think it'll be amazing. I'm not so sure about the TV series, so you know, who knows, we'll see what
I don't know up. How you do the TV series, yeah. but I haven't read the books. I've only read the first 50 pages of the graphic novel, and I hope the books are better.
I think they are.
Okay, well then I hope so, because the graphic novel is okay. I just think that they went with a crappy format.
Yeah, no, it's just an interesting mashup. Western with horror is very cool, and I'm excited. And I do love Stephen King, and I love most of the films that have come out of his work. So I think he'll insist, at least, and Ron Howard will insist on a really high-quality project. So
well, Stephen King might not have much say in it, because he's had very little say over his films in the past.
That's true, but I have a feeling that they'll bring him on, only because it's Ron Howard, and he actually has respect for the people behind the scripts and the original works.
Okay.
I think so.
Well, I hope it'll be good. I'll probably see it in theaters maybe. It depends what the trailers look like when they actually come out with stuff for it. If it looks like crap, I won't see it.
It's not going to look like crap.
It probably won't, but, you know, it's all going to depend how they go about it. And I'll probably have read at least one of the darn books by then.
Oh, yeah. I'm planning on reading the series. So, and it's not coming out I don't think it's coming out for a couple years, at least.
Oh, okay.
So, they haven't even started production, I don't believe. So, you know, we're still in the beginning stages. We just know that it's going to be made.
Yeah. Well, I wish I knew enough about the Dark Tower to say whether or not it would be smart on their part to do what they did with Lord of the Rings, which is to film it all at once.
I have a feeling that they might try for that. And I haven't read the series either, like I said. But
so they're going to cram like the whole series into three movies then?
Yes.
Well, I guess they could probably pull that off. Because it's Stephen King, it's not Tolkien, because Tolkien was dense. And Stephen
Very
King,
dense.
At least of what I've read of King's, a lot of what he writes is stuff that you can cut out anyway for a film. Yes. Either because it's internal, like, dialogue that's within somebody that you can't show on a screen anyway, so.
Right, yeah. No, I think it'll be fun as a three-book, as a trilogy, so we'll see.
We'll see.
But yeah. Very exciting for Stephen King fans and Dark Tower fans, so.
Absolutely. All right, and that's it for our new segment. We'll be right back with a discussion on something of relation to sci-fi. We're not going to tell you what it is. You have to wait for after the porn.
I hate waiting.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll be right back. And we're back with our main segment. This week we're talking about something that apparently, since Jen corrected me now, it started with Mike Brotherton talking about defining science fiction, but then got picked up by IO9, who wrote...
No, it got picked up by somebody else, by Graham Storrs, who decided that he would explore not just what made science fiction, but what made good, if not great, science fiction. And then IO9 obviously snagged it and posted it on a much wider forum than Graham Storrs reaches. And there's been kind of a tiffy over what makes great science fiction.
There's really a tiffy?
Not really.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
I suppose there's a little bit of a tiffy. You know, people disagree with each other. You know, it's a tiffy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know. I didn't think there was anything to be tiffy about. But anyway, so that's what we're going to talk about our criteria for what makes great science fiction in general, just great science fiction in general. So we should probably start off by throwing out all of the stuff that applies to all literature, because it doesn't seem fair to say, like, great science fiction has to have a high quality writing, because isn't that kind of true, like, of all genres? Like,
right, yeah, you can't really say the stuff that's pretty obvious to all books.
Right, right. I mean, the
although
obvious
I suppose stuff. There could be a great science fiction that's horribly written. I just really doubt it.
Well, I guess it'll depend on your definition of horribly written.
True.
Because horribly written for me would be practically unreadable.
Right.
Which would be kind of like some of the stuff I've been reading lately. So, but we won't say anything more about that because this is a public forum and I'm not supposed to be saying that. But anyway, so we should throw out all of that stuff. We should throw out high quality writing, having good plot, memorable characters, or maybe characters that you either sympathize with or that you're interested in or whatever.
Right.
All of that stuff, I mean, for the most part, that applies to all literature.
Yes.
So to varying degrees, and I really don't want to get into varying degrees of like what constitutes high quality of writing, because I have no idea. I mean, I couldn't explain it to you. I could just tell you that 90% of what we read is not high quality, so.
Or at least of what you read.
At least of what is high quality for me, yeah. And Twilight, definitely not in the top.
Not high quality, no.
No, it's definitely in, like, the bottom 1,000.
Yes.
Like, at the top of the 1,000, because below that is, like, every awful self-published book in which every rule of grammar was violated in one sentence. So,
wow, you're just taking off the kid gloves today, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. You just can't have to deal with it. So anyway, so we're throwing all that out because that's not important. We can't talk about it because it's just it applies. If we were having a what makes great literature, then we could discuss that. But
right.
I mean, then we could have a debate because plot is one of those weird things. Like, I mean, is
right. Some books don't have plot but have great characters. So
yeah, or the plot is not an obvious plot in the like right. mainstream sense. They're more like plots in terms of character development,
right?
Which is not necessarily a plot in the traditional sense. But anyway, so not talking about that. What we're going to talk about is what we hope are going to be agreed criteria, but maybe they won't be, of what make good great science fiction. So I think one of the big things for me is it, I mean, I have a bunch of ideas, but the big one is I think it needs to have a compelling idea, concept, technology, or problem that is being addressed, whether solved, broken down, or whatever. So
explored, yes.
Yeah, in some way it's being explored, or it's present.
I have to agree with that. I know that's not very exciting, but
no.
That is definitely fundamental to me for a great science fiction. Not necessarily a science fiction, but for a great one. I want to explore something big, bigger than what is taking place directly on the page.
Oh, I'm not sure what you mean by that. What do you mean bigger than what's on the page?
Well, in that, you know, you have, you know, the characters and you have the plot and you have the little scenes. But I want something bigger than that. I want something that takes me out of even the science fiction story, that makes me think about the problem.
Oh,
technology,
okay.
You know, whatever it is. But I want to be able to explore it past the pages of the book.
Okay, so you're thinking in terms of things like allegories and...
Well, not necessarily allegorical, but, I mean, that helps for me. But I don't think science fiction has to be allegorical to be great. But what you just said, you know, that has to explore or take apart something, technology or a problem or whatever.
Right.
I want to be able to think about that. Right. I want to think about that past the book. I don't want to just read the book and go, okay, that problem was solved or that was explored to my, you know, satisfaction. Because that just seems kind of boring to me.
Right, but that would mean that for you, then, what's important is that it's in some way allegorical, that it's dealing with something that you can then apply to your real conditions.
No, not necessarily. Like, for instance, a book that explores climate change, because that's what I've been reading recently.
Right, but that's something that is related to your real conditions.
That is, but that doesn't necessarily make it allegorical. I mean, the fact that the book is about climate change, I don't want the problem to be solved within the pages of the book. I don't want it to be completely dissected to the point where I don't have to think about it anymore.
Right, right. Well, I'm having issues separating what you're saying here from allegory.
I suppose you are.
But that's because I think all science fiction is allegorical, so...
Yeah, well, no, because... you know, if you're going, yeah, okay. See, allegory being something that, you know, it's not literal, correct?
No, that it's looking at something else, but without actually looking at it. Like for example, I mean, the big one that people say within fantasy is that Lord of the Rings is an allegory of World War II, right?
Right.
It's not World War II, but it's using the same... seems to be using the same thing. He would deny it. He would say it's not allegorical, and he would stab you with, like, the Sword of Shannar or whatever sword. But yeah, but people...
No, okay, yeah. And right, but okay, so you go with allegory, extended metaphor, a la Lord of the Rings, World War II, okay?
Yeah.
If you have a book about climate change, that is not an allegory for climate change. That is a literal translation. See what I'm saying?
Yes, it could be a little transition, but what could be going on inside of it? The characters, the way the characters are interacting.
Well, granted,
individual things could very well be
happening.
Yeah.
Right. What's happening within the book could be certain things could be allegorical. Hell, the climate change could be allegorical for something else. But in terms of a book that is exploring climate change, and it's very clear cut on we are exploring climate change and its application in reality, you know, in real life. I still don't want that solved. I don't want the problem solved within that book. I mean, this is in terms of like science fiction that is more taking place in the present. You know, it's like the recent William Gibson books that discuss social networking. They're not necessarily allegorical. They're just exploring a current problem.
Oh, well, I've only read Spook Country, so.
Right. And I haven't read them either, but. They're not necessarily, I'm sorry, but they aren't necessarily allegory.
But they're not necessarily sci-fi either.
Well, yeah, only because you have your whole, it has to take place in the future.
Well, first off, I have read Spook Country.
Right.
There are things in it that you might want to say are science fiction, but when you think about it, the technology is there that almost anything that's in there could be done today. Could be being done today, right now.
Yes,
that doesn't make it science fiction.
Well,
there's nothing.
Well, no, in Spook Country, you have it theoretically could be being done, but it's not. See what I'm saying? And the technology isn't actually quite there.
But that's a ridiculous basis if we're going to call that science fiction.
It's just, well, no,
just
because it's a very short-term future possibility. It's not being done because it isn't possible. It's close to being possible. It's so close it hurts, but it's still not at this point in time possible.
No, it's completely possible in space.
Or at the no, I don't think it is. I well, have,
absolutely.
That's no.
Well, they, maybe we'll have that discussion another
whole,
time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, so what I'm saying is, I yes, I want it to be explored, but I think to be great, it needs to
leave something open at the end.
Leave something open and leave you wanting to think about the topic more.
Okay, well, that's interesting. That wouldn't be one of my criteria, but then again, it's just not something I've thought about.
Oh, well.
I don't think I've ever read a book that answers all my questions.
I suppose not. But some manage to not make you want to really think about it more either. Not the great ones, obviously. But some books just kind of go, okay, well, that was interesting. I'm moving on now. Even if they don't answer all the questions.
Yeah, I get what you mean there.
A great, I suppose it's just a great book in general, but great science fiction for sure. Explores technology, human condition, whatever, and really makes me thirsting for more on the topic.
Okay, that makes sense to me then.
Okay.
I think I know what you mean by that. Okay, so well, it seems like we agree there that there needs to be a novum.
Yes.
And an interesting thing that I saw the post on Io9 or where it was before, and then it came to Io9, I don't really care, whatever. I just don't care. That's just stupid. No. Anyway, one of the things that he brought up was this idea of something to do with human nature, which is something that you hear a lot about science fiction, that, you know, science fiction explores the human condition and yada, 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 right?
Right.
And for me, that is, I think, for me, in some way essential. It has to, in some manner, explore or discuss something to do with the human condition, even if by proxy. By that I mean, even if you're talking about what could be the human condition by following somebody or something that isn't even human. Because even by doing that, you're still in some way, or you're inviting human beings, the people reading, which would be humans predominantly, to explore their own conditions in some way.
Agreed.
So in some way, that needs to be in there, the human condition. It doesn't need to be like really in-depth and like literary, you know. You know, I'm sorry. That was...
No, I think you're referring to the question that was mold, I suppose you could say, is the, I want, he talked to a publisher, something, an editor, who said, I want to see a manuscript that shows me a future that might happen and asks, is this what we really want for ourselves?
Hmm.
And in terms of the human condition. And he answers that with, he's like, you know, he was like, well, yeah, you know, some of the greatest books, you know, 1984, Brave New World, Fahrenheit 451, Forever War, et cetera, are some of these great, you know, what happens in our future and asks, is this what we really want for ourselves? But I don't think they necessarily all ask that question, is this what we really want for ourselves? But they certainly explore a possible condition, human condition.
Right, because even if we don't ask that question when we read 1984, we're still experiencing or able to experience how we as human beings react in situations about how a society like that comes to be.
Right. Okay, but then he comes back with, wait a minute, some great sci-fi isn't at all like this. But he's going with the dystopian social commentary mold, direct quote. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, but just because a book isn't dystopian or specifically social commentary, I think most of it still, the things that I've considered great, still have that exploration of a future and not necessarily what might happen to us specifically, but still are allegorical to what might happen to us. And do we want that?
Right. Even a future that is more positive, that's still one that we have to think, is that a world that we still want to live in? And
exactly.
Even so, it's you know, you get to see characters who experience this world, and we get to think about those conditions, the human conditions that are a part of that.
Yes, yeah. And I definitely see that as, I think that's intrinsic to science fiction, period, personally.
I would think most science fiction, I think almost pretty much all science fiction does explore the human condition, but I think that only certain texts actually explore it in a way that's of value. Like, there are a lot of texts where it's like, oh, you know, characters are kind of like, it's kind of about like, oh, he was tortured and that sucks. But it's like, yeah, but it was really obvious and there wasn't anything to think about. It was just sort of, they hit you over the face with it and it was over.
Right.
Those sort of texts, like, there may be that may still be in there, but it's not adding anything to the conversation.
No, I agree. Yeah. And that doesn't happen a lot. I think I'm trying to think of one science fiction book that I've read that doesn't in some way explore the human condition, even if it's really elusive.
I've never read one. No, no, I've read some, but I never finished them.
Right.
Exactly. But that was because it goes with that whole high quality writing thing. And it was really awful. Even though this isn't related to science fiction, but like, you know, because I think it is important also to fantasy to have similar things. And I read a story last night that I got to the end of the story and it was just a short story. And I was like, that was completely pointless. The story was this. It was, there's a goblin and he sees some humans come up into his land, his like kingdom. And he has this whole like ordeal where he's going to go tell the big boss that humans are here and we got to do something about it. And then, okay. And then he has like this argument with himself. He's like, I have to stay at my post. I can't leave. And which doesn't make any sense. Like, so what if he would just stay there? If like an army came trolling through, he wouldn't even go warn anybody. That's just like a stupid social rule. But anyway, so that was dumb. But so he ends up going back eventually. Like he gets relieved of his post, or I don't remember how it works, but and then the response is, oh, we're going to go attack. And then in the end of the story, there's a big fight and the humans turn out to be werewolves and they eat them all. And then that's the end.
Yeah. What the hell is the point of that?
What was the point of this? I mean, it didn't really get into the characters at all. There was almost nothing about what the goblin, the main character, which is a goblin. I mean, what does he feel about any of this? Like, where are his conflicts? There was nothing.
His
it was
motivations.
Just like, it was motivations. His motivations were obvious. He just protect the kingdom. But, like, there was no attachment to it. It was just like, that's just what I got to do. So go do it and I'm done. Like, you could almost say that would have been a critique of, say, I don't know, like industrialism. Except for it's not. Because there's nothing about that. There was no context that would give you that impression that it's an industrial allegory. So it was just, it's just a meaningless story. It's similar to when we talked about Spar, you know?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand what the point. It's a science fiction story, but you get through the story and you go, so what? She just like was raped or had rape sex with a tentacle creature for like 5 pages. Okay.
What's the point?
What was
Agreed.
The point of this? What I mean?
Right.
Are you?
And I think that's actually a problem with a lot of fantasy. I think is that, you know, it's just a story, and what is the point of just a story? I mean, yes, I see a point. It's nice to sit down and just read a story now and again, a good story. But to me, that's not what makes something great. Cool. And there's a lot of stories in fantasy, and I think that kind of dilutes the possibility for greatness in fantasy.
Well, I wouldn't say there's a lot. I would.
No, there's a lot.
I want to counter something you just said, which is this idea that a story that's just kind of like, it's just an adventure or whatever, that somehow like I often think that stories that we disconnect ourselves from are not necessarily adventure stories. They're just really poorly written stories. Cause you could see, I'm thinking like, I haven't read the book, but I've seen the movie Princess Bride, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It is fairly a straightforward, fairly cliche. It's obvious cause it's making fun of itself. It's kind of a parody, but you know, it's this very straightforward adventure story. There's love. They're all that, you know, kind of typical romantic fantasies type stuff. But I don't see that as a bad story because...
No. It's not a bad story. It's a great story. But I'm... And obviously this is totally subjective. I want more for something... For me to consider something truly great.
But there's so much in Princess Bride.
I know. No.
There's big philosophical rants.
Right. And that's part of the reason I actually think The Princess Bride is great, because yes, it's just a story, but within that story, you're getting tossed at things that are bigger than just the story.
Right, and that's like the big difference, because at its heart, it's still just an adventure story, but it has all right. of these little things that add to it, whereas the story that I had read, it
had
it was just a long action sequence, basically.
No,
and
no,
the same with Spar. I didn't see that there was anything in Spar that took it beyond. It didn't make me question anything. It didn't make me think about anything. I just, well, except for the fact that it was vulgar, which, like, okay, maybe that was its point. It just wanted to be disgusting. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, right. So, but I mean, I think, yeah, so we kind of agree that it needs to be that, that hint more.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And within science fiction, I think it's more clearly connected to that human condition than maybe with other stuff, but I could be wrong.
I don't know.
I think so. I think most science fiction and most good science fiction deals with the human condition in a way that no other literature can, because it can do both. It can do both thinking about our present conditions, about what we think of ourselves now, and it can do the job of thinking about where we could be.
Reflects on the present to explore the future. Or reflects on the future to explore the present, depending on the book.
Right. It can do it both ways. Whereas I think with general literature, it's usually you have the past or the present. That's it.
Right.
You know, and sci-fi can look at all of it.
Agreed.
So I mean, I think that's a criteria. Human, nature, good stuff.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, another one for me, this is maybe hard to explain because we talked about it with Mike Brotherton a bit. I think a science fiction story, for it to be good, it has to have believable or believably unbelievable science.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Does that make sense, what I mean by that?
I think science fiction should have that, period, but a lot of it doesn't. So that means that for something to be great, it probably does.
Wait, but does that make sense what I mean by believable or believably unbelievable?
Believably unbelievable. Or, yes.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, just in case, no, I'm assuming it makes sense. But if not, I just mean, like, either science that is accurate or science that is not accurate, but
explained in such a way that you believe it. Yes.
Yeah, that it's treated in a way that even though it's not accurate, you still believe it. Like, I mean, faster than light travel. I mean, so many science fiction stories have that.
But so many.
But if you treat faster than light travel intelligently, or relatively intelligently,
relatively.
Yeah. Relatively intelligently. Yes. If you do that, then you're able to suspend your disbelief, and that's the same way you have to do with fantasy. But
yes.
But as soon as it starts getting like really, really weird and crazy.
Well, because at that point is when it becomes fantasy. If you're using unbelievable science and not making it believably scientific, then it is just fantasy.
Yeah, but I think in a science fiction story, when you start to make me doubt the efficacy of your world,
mm-hmm.
that's the point when I start, like, I'm out. Like, because I don't have a problem with a fantasy story. Like, you know, stuff shows up in a fantasy, like steampunk or whatever, something shows up that is... it's scientific-y, but it's not really. It's just total BS. But I can suspend my disbelief. But as soon as you set that in a science fiction world, it doesn't matter if we are trying to say, like, oh, there's that fine line, and like, so it's just a science fantasy. But no, because when you mess it up like that, when you try so hard to make it seem realistic and it just is a load of crap, you throw me completely out of the story and I'm done.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
But you know, at that point, it becomes fantasy, and then I just lose all respect for the science fiction.
Right, right. Okay, well, I guess...
If they had said it in a place that allowed for the fantasy, not so bad. You know, a la the... what's his name? China Mabel. His stuff, it's unbelievable science, you know? But it's okay, because it's set in a place where that is... makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're setting it in like a totally science fictional world where science seems to rule everything else, where you have a lot of technology and whatnot, and then suddenly something happens where you're going, wait, what? And they don't even explain it well, then you just lose all respect for the book.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's actually, I was just thinking, I was looking through the books that I have on my shelf, and one of them is Brandon Sanderson's Warbreaker. which Woo-hoo! I'm fairly sure is considered a science fiction. Maybe I'm thinking of a different book. No, I'm thinking of C.F. Bentley's Harmony. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay, yeah, because Warbreaker is a fantasy.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I haven't read it yet. That's what I just realized. Anyway, I got both of the books at the same time, and I've been, like, you know, mixing them up since then. Okay, anyway. No, C.F. Bentley wrote a book called Harmony, which deals with a world that the characters are genetically inclined to be able to do certain things. Now, it almost seems like fantasy fairly frequently because you're kind of going, holy shit, how can people do this? You know, but the world is set up, and plus it's a religion that's going on, and it's a planet that people are in castes. Each caste has the ability to do certain things with they have like things that they're better at than others, and somehow they seem to be genetically inclined. But you don't find that out until much later, because you're kind of looking at it from the point of view of a very, very strictly religious world.
Right.
So at points, it seems like fantasy, but it's done in such a way that you're willing to go, okay, if you lived in a world where your entire life you're told that something is given to you by the gods, then it might seem like God-given magic for those of us that don't believe in gods. Anyway, however, it can still be explained as science fiction. As, you know, like I said, a genetic thing or some sort of technological advancement, who knows. And it still works. And I'm okay with that. As long as the conditions are set to make that seem believable. If he hadn't created this world that worked within that context, I would have tossed the book out immediately. As it was, I actually kind of enjoyed it.
But Bentley is a he?
I don't know. Maybe it's a girl.
I just assumed maybe it was a she. Just
because it's a CF.
Well, because that as sad as it sounds, there are a lot of women that still
sexist.
No. It's a historical thing. A lot of women still use the initials because they sell more books that way, which I think is wrong. But
it's very possible it's a woman. I'm looking it up now, only because the main character is female. I suppose, you know.
I just wasn't sure. I just kind of assumed, but I could be completely wrong.
It's a woman.
Oh!
Well done! It's actually a pseudonym. Her name isn't C.F. or Bentley. Her real name is Irene Bradford.
Wait, Irene Radford? Really?
Yep.
Oh my goodness! I've read her fantasy.
Wow. See, there you go. Maybe that's why it somehow... who knows? That's interesting.
Yeah, she wrote a dragon... I think it was a quartet, but I could be wrong. I read the first book, which I found really good.
Interesting.
And I have the second, I think. I haven't read it yet, but I found it really good. I can't remember what it was about, but that was like years and years ago that I read it. And I just remember enjoying it.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed Harmony, so...
Cool.
She successfully, to me, made the jump to science fiction. It's one of those slightly odd science fictions, though, that, like I said, you know, and I don't think I'd call it great, but
it works,
even though it's literally an inch away from being fantasy, but she makes it just believable enough that I'm going, I buy it.
Well, okay, so this is really interesting, because, like, I'm looking right now at the, there's the, like, sci-fi list website. I don't know what the actual website's called. It's, like, AustarNet or whatever. But anyway, they have this top 100 sci-fi books list, which is voted on by, I think, the general public. There's, like, a poll you take. And it's really interesting, because I've read a number of the ones that are, like, in the top 20. You know, like, for example, Ender's Game. I've read Foundation. Fahrenheit 451, 1984, Neuromancer, Deandre's Dream of Electric Sheep, Ringworld, Brave New World, I think I read Time Machine years ago, Childhood End, Forever War.
Yeah, I've surprisingly read quite a few of these.
Yeah, I mean, there are more that I didn't mention, but, you know.
So, theoretically, I should be able to recognize great science fiction.
Well, I mean, this is public by what people say of great science fiction, and I think about the ones that I have read, and all of them do seem to have, to some extent, all of the elements that I've described as being necessary for great sci-fi. I mean, all of them in some way talk about the human condition.
Yes.
At least of the ones I just mentioned. All of them have an interesting idea, concept, technology problem.
Yes.
So most of them more with a problem than with an interesting technology. I mean, I mentioned a whole bunch of dystopias.
Dune is considered the second greatest, and that definitely has a very interesting technology, which feeds the rest of the book. So.
But I'm only talking about the stuff that I've read.
I know, and I'm talking about the stuff that I've read.
Well, you're...
So it still works.
Okay, well, fine.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, I just wasn't sure. I was just
the definition that we have so far agreed upon still works.
Not definition, criteria. Well, it's a definition. Yeah, no, it's definition.
Okay.
I'm teaching this in school right now, so yeah. Definition. Anyway, yeah, I mean, they'll have the human condition. They'll have, to some extent, either believable or believably unbelievable science. Foundation is kind of pushing it now, but that's just because it was like 50 years ago or 59 years ago when that was released. So it's kind of like, it's unfair to treat its science by today's standards.
Right.
But the rest of them that I mentioned, I mean, yeah, they have believably unbelievables. I mean, Ringworld, I mean, it's about they go to this literally a ring that's a world around a sun, and that's a lot to ask somebody to, like, oh, that's totally possible. Like, somebody just made that. It was no big deal. You know, that's a lot of material you have to build and stuff, so.
Yeah.
But.
Well, so is Dune's spice. Somehow makes us able to journey across the world. Whatever.
Right, right. But, I mean, you know, it's believably unbelievable, though.
Unbelievable.
The way Niven does it, he's very deep with it. Yeah.
Right. The authors are able to make us believe what they just pulled out of their butts.
Basically, yeah.
You know?
This is really interesting, and I'm surprised Forever War is not higher on the list, actually. It kind of disturbs me.
I'm surprised by the number that I've actually read from this list, because, like, I mean, it's so many... there's the memes that go out occasionally, you know, and it'll be the science fiction books you must read.
Right.
I'm going, okay, whatever. And I go through, and I've read, like, 5 of them. Which is really sad. I've actually read probably at least a quarter to a third of these.
Of the top 20 or the whole list?
Of the whole list.
Oh, well, I'm probably a little over a quarter.
Dune, Hitchhikers, 1984, Fahrenheit 451, Starship Troopers, Neuromancer, Android's Dream. Did I read in Ringworld? I don't remember. Time Machine, War of the Worlds, Martian Chronicles, Snow Crash, Jurassic Park. I can keep going, but
yeah. No, we get the point. Yeah, I mean, you've read quite a few,
I'm surprised that I've read as many as I have. I really, out of the top 50, I've read a ton. I've read less of the bottom 50 than I have the top, which kind of makes me kind of happy, because that means, I mean, if this is what people have agreed upon as great science fiction, you know, I apparently can actually recognize great science fiction, because they are the books that over the years I've gone, oh, that was a damn good book.
Yeah, yeah.
So, damn good.
Right. Well, then it seems like we have a good idea of what constitutes great science fiction then, because
yes,
I don't know if there are any other criteria we could throw in.
For great science fiction?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, to an extent, we very much agree with what Mike Brotherton said. His direct quote is, science fiction is a kind of story in which science or technology plays a central role, both in terms of the plot and theme, which I disagree with. And the science or technology elements are beyond our current knowledge or capabilities, without violating what we already know, which I also disagree with, permitting the exploration of novel ideas and the reaction of humanity to them. I think he as a scientist...
Yeah.
Appreciates the things that are scientifically accurate, and in which he's a hard sci-fi guy, which is not to say that there aren't some freaking amazing hard sci-fis out there, but I don't think that they're the end-all be-all of science fiction.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've had that discussion on this podcast before, so I don't want to get too deep into that.
Right. So yeah, I think we're I can't think of anything else. Can you think of anything else?
No, but we can leave that for our crazy listeners to decide. I mean, if you think there are any other criteria that maybe we missed or maybe we got something wrong, feel free to pop us an email or leave a comment with as many curse words as you as you feel you need.
Oh, totally.
Yes.
I love curse words.
Yeah, I do too. Anyway, so yeah, so I think that'll end out this segment. It actually was a little bit shorter than I thought it would be, but hey, it worked out. We didn't have as much disagreement. So
no. Well, you and I are, we're like-minded.
Yeah, we're kindred spirits. Senses. We're like twins. Really.
Exactly.
But, you know, born years apart.
I'm sure other people probably disagree with us, though, but they're not that smart.
Yeah, well, that's not very nice. Yeah. Anyway, so why don't we come back with our reading and writing section, and we'll close out the show with our question of the week.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. We will be back. And we're back with our reading and writing section.
Yay!
Yeah. We're going to be really obnoxious with it. No, we're not going to do that.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
<Do-do-do-do>. Sorry. Okay, so what are you reading?
Okay, so I am reading lots of things. I did the little lend me thing on my Nook, and I borrowed Let the Right One In.
Ooh.
Which is pretty good, about 75 pages in, which is good. I'm still reading an E.C. Tubb book, one of the ones from the Doomeress series with Gath in the name. I can't remember the title. And I think I'm 50 pages into that, and it's only like a 120-page book, so that's a lot. And I've been reading short stories and being unimpressed and other things.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. And now I am reading The Chronicles of Narnia in Spanish, or Los Crónicas de Narnia.
If really? You want to
know that. Yeah.
How much do you actually understand?
About 5 words in each sentence.
yeah, I'd probably understand about 5 words in each sentence. So that's pretty sad.
Yeah, shut up.
I'm just kidding.
No, it's just I'm doing this. I'm taking an exam in like 2 weeks.
I know.
And I'm not even prepared. I'm going to pull that out, but yeah.
That's okay.
But anyway, and the other book I'm reading is actually a book called Utopics by Luis Marin, which is, it's some French guy who's going to confuse the hell out of me while he talks about utopia. So,
I like utopia.
I like utopia, but this book I hear, I haven't started and everyone else in the class is telling me, it's hard, it's really hard, I don't get it. And I'm like, man, I should have started this last week.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm reading Derrida, which I think this week we are doing The Politics of Friendship.
Cool.
Don't ask me what it's about, because I don't know.
All right, so I'm not reading anything anywhere near as intelligent as what you're reading.
Thanks.
I'm still working on The Salt Roads, which I'm still loving. It's a little bit sexy, though.
Ooh.
Just as a warning to everybody out there.
Wow.
Yes, lots of lesbian goodness.
Oh,
anyway.
Okay.
And then I'm reading a new comic book from Marvel. I actually finished it, but I wanted to mention it anyway because I think it's a nice contrast to what you're reading.
Oh.
I'm reading X-23, which is the clone of Wolverine.
Oh.
She's a newer mutant in the X universe.
Does she look like him?
She's not hairy, no.
Oh, so she's like hot and big breasted.
She's the hot version of Wolverine, yeah.
Yeah.
And she has foot claws, which is kind of cool.
Weird.
Anyway, so that's Green Arrow. I'm reading. And then I'm reading the Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition Player's Handbook.
Woo!
I know.
Go nerds!
I'm having an exceptionally nerdy week, yes.
That's fantastic.
That's what I'm reading.
To be fair, I did finish some stuff, but it was really awful.
Oh, well then, yeah, don't mention that.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you want to tell everybody that it was awful and they shouldn't read it.
Yeah, I read a bunch of short stories, and I read, like, the first page of 2 separate books, and they were both awful.
Oh.
And I guess that's what I get for taking free stuff from BNN, so.
Yes.
And they were self-published, so.
Are you writing anything right now?
No.
No.
Well, I mean, I'm working on all sorts of stuff, but right now I think I'm writing a response to something that was said in my class about The Dark Knight.
Oh, right. I would like to read that when you're finished with it.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be about how the boat scene is actually not... There's nothing positive about that.
There isn't anything positive about the boat scene.
Yep.
Your teacher called that utopian?
No. He didn't call it quite utopian, but they did point... The problem is that the vision at the end of The Dark Knight is... The Dark Knight is actually... He's not really a utopian figure either.
Right.
Because even though he's trying to maintain a utopia, he's doing it by not allowing anyone to have a choice. And utopia, at least in the way that what we're reading now is trying to define it, is one of the principal elements of utopia is freedom. And
yes.
The Dark Knight explicitly denying that. He's not allowing them to make a choice. They don't have a choice in the matter of whether or not they want to continue having hope.
Agreed.
So the boat scene is supposed to be that this idea that there was a freedom of choice and that they made a choice not to do anything, but I actually don't see that as a positive. I actually see that as the downfall of democracy.
You just made my brain hurt.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to think about that. It's interesting.
Think about that scene. Think about why it is the complete destruction of the democratic process.
Okay, I will.
Yeah. So that's what
everybody
we're doing.
Everybody else should too.
Or not.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this week our question is...
If you could have dinner with one science fiction or fantasy character, who would it be?
Yes, and we want you to tell us who it would be. It doesn't matter who it is. It could be your wildest fantasies.
Wildest fantasies. Ooh, I know exactly who I'd want to have dinner with then.
Honor Harrington?
Oh, yeah, I totally would. That'd be awesome. She's so cool. And No, because I couldn't have sex with her.
Well, you could.
I wouldn't want to. Anyway, that's not my answer, I swear. Okay.
Well, so, I don't... Okay.
Yes, so your wildest fantasies. And you can give us one science fiction and one fantasy if you'd like. Up to you, obviously.
Yep. Either one works. So the ways you can do that is you can send us an email at skiffyandfanty@... Bloody hell. Can't talk.
SkiffyandFanny@gmail.com.
Yes. Voicemail at
206-203-1686.
You can leave a comment at
SkiffyandFanty.wordpress.com.
You didn't even say it right.
Skiffy and Fanty. Skiffy and Fanty.
Skiffy and Fanty. .wordpress.com. Or you can leave a Twitter message at our Twitter.
Twitter.com/SkiffyandFanty.
Yeah. So those are the ways you can contact us.
I think we should do this every week.
Oh, where you emasculate me? Yeah. I've always wanted that.
I know.
That's
have a great
my
week,
fantasy
folks.
For the week.
Oh, that's a good fantasy.
Yeah, great. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Autobots, roll out!